Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for Ryan, Jeff, and Nick from the prog rock band Cruel Curses. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Hello.
Yeah, so happy to have you guys here. This is the first one we're filming in the new digs here in the Palm Tower.
Oh, I like it.
The reverse bat cave, seven floors up instead of seven floors down.
I like it.
That was my nickname in high school.
Whoa.
Reverse bat cave.
So
it echoes in there.
Let's get into that.
He knows.
Yeah.
So I know you guys have recently released a single called How to Perform an Exorcism that is quite a length and breadth. And I know that your songs...
We're compensating.
I know your songs have... quite a unique flair to them, not only in length, and I definitely want to talk about that. But what I'm really curious about, and you guys can individually answer this or however you see fit, but how does your musical journey start that leads you to this abstract place?
Quick history on the band. Nick and I started it pretty much back in 2015, so over 9 years ago. And it was kind of born out of the ashes of a prior project that I had. And he has a band called Sahi that's still going. And we had played my old project, played with them a couple times. And I was like, that guy can play guitar. If I could ever have a lead guitar player like that guy, I'd be real cool. Because I can't really play guitar, but he can. So I was like, I asked him and he's like, send me your demos. And said, he's like, this is cool. And then I don't even know if he ever like formally joined. We just kept playing. So it was like, he's still here 9 and a half later. So I guess he liked it. Jeff joined 2 years later. And he's been in the band for over 7 years. So the core of the band is the three of us. But we have an awesome drummer who plays live with us, Connor. And he's like our live drummer, but he's a really great dude. He's been in the band. He's been playing with us for almost 2 years. And then we have a keyboard player. We kind of just started adding in the Ivories, I don't know, about a year and a half ago. So, yeah.
That's Ryder.
So that sort of thing, in the beginning, I think we were just pretty straightforward rock. But as we kept playing, the first incarnation of the band, that was me, Nick, a buddy of ours, Kyle, who played bass, and then a really good friend of ours, Brian. And the only reason Brian's not still in the band is because he had a kid. Curse you, Brian.
Curse you, Brian.
I don't mean it. I do mean it. You know, we all kind of come from that background, like in 70s jam rock shit. And
yeah, was that the big pool of influence initially?
For me, it's always been my holy triumphant has been Foo Fighters, Queens of the Stone Age, and Led Zeppelin. I have Zeppelin tattoos on me, you know, so that's kind of always been where I come from. These guys have a more varied background in terms of what they listen to. I've always been kind of like, I like seven bands, and I kind of listen to them, and I try to get out of my wheelhouse. I'm like, no, I don't like it. And I go back into my cave. It's kind of depressing. But I think for all of us, yeah. I mean, I can't speak for them, but
yeah.
Speaking
well, tell
for them,
me a little bit how you guys started playing.
Like playing guitar?
Where did music come into your life then?
Man, so... I mean, I'll take me, Jeff, and then you can take you, or I'll take you, and you can take me. No, anyway, I've always been part of a really big musical family.
Cool.
Like, nobody really made it, but you know, just music has always been a part of our life. Like, some of my earliest memories are hanging out in the living room where just blaring Michael Jackson, and the family is just dancing and singing, having a good time, and you know, my dad one day pulled out his jumbo body Gibson acoustic guitar. I'd never seen it. I was 10 years old at the time.
Dang.
You know, that went away for a couple of years, and my brother and I, you know, your preteen, teen years, that's when you start really getting into music.
Right.
And he showed me, like, metal and AC/DC and, you know, Metallica and all this fun stuff, and we really bonded like that. And, about 15, he was like, hey, you should learn how to play guitar. And I went, great, let's do that. And you know, then a few years after that, me and my brother started a band. He was talking about it, Sahi, and yeah. So I guess my musical influence is just a grab bag of everything, anything I really like, anything that just sounds really cool. Again, it started out with AC/DC and Metallica, and then. You know, you get Pink Floyd, you know, the dad pulls out the Yes record, and you're like, oh, man, okay, this is fun. This is fun. But, you know, the Beatles, Rolling Stones are his bread and butter in The Who. And, you know, when I got older, I started finding my own things with, like, Steve Vai and Satriani and, you know, all of these things. And anymore, it's just, what can I pull out? Oh, Frank Zappa, this is really weird, but I like it a lot, so... You know, I guess I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. So was for you, it was always music.
For sure, for sure. Like, I don't know that you know, music has played out yet as part of like a career or anything like that. But
yeah.
It's always been a passion of mine. Something that I can always grab onto. Like, even if I'm not doing anything else, I'd like to be listening to some kind of music, you know. Anything. Please just give me anything, you know. Jeff, why don't you take it away?
Yeah, I mean, I started playing guitar when I was 4, and I say playing guitar, but I was interested in a guitar at a garage sale, and my parents were like, okay, it's like $1, whatever.
Yeah.
And I played with it so much, they're like, this kid kind of wants to play this thing. So they got me, you know, a cheap starter pack thing, and I stuck with it, and I continued to stick with it. And then I was like, oh, this trick looks fancy that Van Halen's doing that my dad is showing me. Let me try to tap, and it sounds terrible. Try to tap the next week a little bit better.
Why doesn't it stuff work like that? Like he does it.
Well, talk to me a little bit. This is one of the things I'm curious about, and I like to ask people who are more self-taught or were taught by family or whatever. What was it like for you in the beginning when you could first start to play? Was the excitement of playing anything what kept you practicing? Mm-hmm. Or did you find yourself like...
Please, yes.
Did you find yourself having to force yourself to practice to get over those humps?
Ooh, both is the answer, actually. Like, because in the start, like, you start learning stuff and you're like, you either have the thought of, oh, I suck so bad. This sounds so bad, right? But then, you know, after a while, Seven Nation Army starts to sound like music, right? Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. Whereas the weeks before that, it was just plink and, oh, that's not the right fret or whatever. But once you get it, oh my God, what a rush.
Right.
And then you want to learn another riff. And then you want to learn another riff.
Yeah.
And it's just naturally like, you get off of school. You know, you come home, you throw your backpack on the floor and grab the guitar. And I would keep playing until I realized it's too dark to see the frets anymore. You know.
That probably helps.
So, yeah, after you get that rush, then you start wanting, okay, well, then you want to start learning more stuff, right? And so the things you start reading are just regimented practice. So that's when you go, okay, I'm going to start doing that now. So, yeah, the answer is both, right? Like, but it starts off, like, just that excitement, that rush of,
yeah,
oh my God, I got Seven Nation Army down.
Yeah, it's happening.
Look at that.
Yeah, I know for me it was kind of the feeling of, like, learning how a magic trick was done. When
yes.
you, like, get a cheapo pedal that does distortion and you click and you do a power chord, you're like, oh, that's how they do that.
I have become one more of them.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you palm mute and you're like, oh, that sounds pretty good. So, like, I was guitar for a long time, and when I was 14, I heard Primus for the first time. I'm like, you can do that with a bass? That's a bass guitar? So I borrowed a bass from a friend, took to bass, and still playing now. I love to play guitar too, but bass, man, I feel it.
Mm-hmm. Big guitar.
Yeah, I started as a drummer. So I started playing drums when I was 4. My mom had gotten remarried, and my stepdad was a drummer, and he had a drum set.
Oh,
and
nice.
So that was the first thing. I played drums from 4, and I played in bands through my teens. And I would demo stuff out, you know, by myself. I wanted to be Dave Grohl. He was like, oh, he does it all. I want to be that guy. So after a while, being in a band and you're a drummer, you kind of have, like, the shittiest job. No one gives you as much praise as they should, especially if you're a good drummer. So everyone's just like, you know, and they're always the dum-dums or whatever. So I was like, oh,
you're not allowed to bring songs to the band. That's
sure. I was like, I'm going to write my own stuff. And I had, like, a crappy recording program. It was like Sony Acid 4.0 or some nonsense. So I just started multi-tracking, and I wanted to learn how to play a guitar so that I could, you know, like, not have to hate the guitar player in the band because he would be me.
Right.
So that's how it ended. And then I transitioned to running, two projects of my own, and then it finally kind of came to a culmination with Cruel Curses. So, yeah.
Would you say, and that's an interesting thing, mission drift a little bit, but when you have ideas... Or when ideas come to you, maybe that's a separate part of this conversation. But when you have ideas, do you feel like they're already come to you relatively clearly, and that was the benefit of making music just yourself, so the idea could come out without having to have it be compromised by someone you didn't like or someone playing something differently than you already heard it?
Yes. Yeah. And that's
that nail on the head.
Yeah. Yeah, for me at least, you know. And there's 100 different ways a band can write music or be creative or whatever.
Right, exactly.
But for me, it's always just been like over the years, especially the last project before this one, which is 13, 14 years ago now. But with Cruel Curses, it's just like I got to a place where it's like I know what I want. I know how I want things to sound. And you know, it's like sometimes it's like that kind of thing about there's too many chefs in a kitchen.
Right.
But there's also something to be said for like if you have a main or principal songwriter, like, a lot of times that can't get over the finish line without people who are going to, like, oil the gears with you. You can't be alone on an island, especially when you perform live, you know. And a big thing for us, even more than recording and stuff, is like you brought up Exorcism, that song we put out over the summer. The big hope is that, like, people see that live, because, you know, we hope there's a little bit of spectacle to seeing a band play an 18 and a half minute song and not stop.
Exactly.
And get all the dynamics right and get the time changes right and get the tempos right and get the, everything has to fall into place. And, like, we work hard as a band live in a room to make that happen. And that element of being in the band is arguably just as important as, like, who sat in a room and came up with it. It's like the effort to present it and present it professionally and well, you know, because...
And sincerely.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not even like a thing where I'm trying to brag about it. It's like, we just enjoy it because it's a challenge for us. And, like, nobody knows who we are. We're just, you know, another band. But, like, we like the pursuit of it. And also, you know, going back to your question about, like, songwriting and not things getting in the way, being a drummer first has always been important, because a lot of people who write songs, you know, or a guitar player, you know, it's a little stereotypical, they don't sometimes understand the form and function of what drums need to be, at least in rock music. They're just like, I want boom, bap, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, yeah, all right, cool, you're scatting, I don't know. And, like, do you understand that I am not an octopus, or, yeah, like, you know, like, I program these drums, bro. It's like, great. Like, you know, so it's like, for me, it's always been, I felt the benefit is, like, when we've had, you know, we've not had that many personnel changes, really, but the drummers who've come in the band, I felt like I've been able to talk to them. And, like, you know, luckily we've had, you know, drummers that have been in our band who are, you know, really good collaborators, and they're not, like, egomaniacs and they're like, I'm changing everything. It's like, they're coming in and they're like, I like what you do, I'm gonna respect it and, you know, put my spice on it here and there. Like Connor, you know, the last drummer we had, Dan, both those guys, you know, different drummers, but both respect the source material, you know.
Right.
So, you know, because I play drums on the albums, and Brian played on some of the first ones, but, like, Exorcism, I play drums on that. So it's like, you know, I take pride in getting that together, but it's, the rough part about it is, it's like, you know, some people will come in and they want to interior decorate. They want to take a sledgehammer to things. And luckily,
right,
the band has always been pretty well understood, especially that we've had, like, musicians kind of come in and support us live, Connor and Ryder. Ryder is our keyboard player, like I mentioned before. They come in, they like what they hear, and they're happy to be there. And, like, at this point, it's kind of the best thing you can hope for when you're just an under-radar band, is, like, mm-hmm, the hang is good, people enjoy it.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm, what I mean? So it goes back to, like, they must like the songs to some degree because they're here and they're, like, way better than I'll ever be at playing any of those instruments. So it's like, they're like, cool. I'm like, all right, good. But yeah, so it does help. But yeah, understanding the mechanics, the fundamentals of, like, how to play drums, I think has been, like, super important for me as a guitar player, because I'm like, you know, I'm hanging on, but sometimes I'm like, I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. And then I'm like, I know where to go. And I have, like, a meltdown, and I'm like, I don't know what's happening. You know?
He's much better than he's letting on. Yeah, yeah, I'll just say that.
Well, that's because you guys are all playing. You don't hear all the mistakes. But, yeah. So, oh my God.
I second you, Jeff.
Thanks.
I second you,
but anyways, Jeff. But yeah, so that was kind of a loaded answer.
You know, you brought up a really good point. When you're bringing other people in the band, regardless of not if it's a hired gun situation or even in the studio, there's lots of times where the communication can start to sound like fucking boom, boom, boom. You're just playing the part and it doesn't matter what, if we're conveying a keyboard part or whatever.
Yeah.
Because musicians, even when they have theory training, everybody still has their quirks in communication. So I'm wondering how you guys handle communication with your ideas amongst the three of you, and what you've noticed helps you with communicating with some of these drummers that you brought in that you've had success with. Instead of ending up sounding like blah, 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 and not getting anywhere.
I'll say one thing that definitely helps, that kind of clears anything up, is that we have a really good drummer already who records all these drum parts. Mm-hmm. And so it's very easy to just go, hey, play this. And even if you need him to show you exactly how to play it, the guy that played it is literally standing
handy.
Right there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So just, hey, get out of the kit real fast. I'll show you how to do it. You know what I mean? So there's that.
Yeah, to lock things in. Mm-hmm. And also, Ryan writes
the
songs.
Thanks for calling me a good drummer.
Thanks.
Ryan's an excellent drummer. Keep that out.
Wait, I didn't make that deal with you. I'm going to have to Linda Lovelace
you
later.
You got to sign the contract.
No.
I'm going to want that.
What happened to this?
Wait, I think this is a pyramid scheme.
You're about to see us break up live right here.
No, by the way, can I tell you about a timeshare?
Yeah. Do you like Caribbean beachfront property?
And how?
Oh, I just broke my neck.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, but, you know, Ryan is the songwriter in the band. And, you know, he approaches it from a lot of different angles. But having the drummer and also rhythm guitarist be able to write the songs from that angle, and he knows the bass, he gives liberty to Nick for solos. But the feel is there. The vibe is there. Mm-hmm. What's really important, Ryan has a clear vision on what it's supposed to sound like. Not like, I got the G thing, and maybe we could this and that. Like, he knows. He comes in, he knows what it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So we learn the parts. Then we learn what they're supposed to feel like. We get the dynamic down, practice and practice. Because feel is so much. Learning the notes and, like, this is what you do, that's step one. Step two is to make it sound like the song is supposed to sound like. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, he knows what it's supposed to sound like. And there's guidance there. None of us have egos. We're never arguing or anything. It's kind of like, what is this? This. And if I don't understand something a certain way, I'll be like, is it three? And then four? And then this feel? He can get what I'm saying. We get on the same page. And then we move on.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned one of the magic words, and sometimes I like to bring it up and sometimes I don't, but you both said it, so I have to.
Uh-oh.
Ego.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that I'm starting to find with artists of varying disciplines, but certainly musicians, is this whole era of the ultra-precious nature, the ego being, the id serving everything, really seems to be fading away. And when I hear guys like you and other bands say, you know, we don't have any egos, we're really, what I hear is we're comfortable serving the song,
yeah,
whether or not we wrote it or what the case may be. So I'm wondering I shouldn't say how it is you stay comfortable with it, but I'm wondering how it is you got to the point where having the mentality of serving the song first was obviously the way that worked.
If I may.
Yeah, please.
So when you're in a band, you're part of a team, right? And the way that I've always looked at it, because in high school I did marching band and drama and theater and did all that. I even wanted to be an actor at some point.
Very cool.
You should see him on stage.
Yeah, oh man,
it's a treat for the eyes.
Let me tell you something. I talked to my agent, who's sitting right here.
Yeah.
So coming from all of that, what gets drilled into your head more than anything is that this is a team effort, and what we're trying to accomplish is bigger than you individually, right? And that doesn't mean that you're not important. In fact, you're vitally important to what's going on, but you need to serve what we are all doing. You know what I mean? Versus just the thing that you want. You know what I mean? And maybe every aspect of the final product isn't exactly what you want, but is it still a really great product? You know what I mean? If that's the thing, and I say product, people probably don't want to associate art with being a product, but
it is.
But just the word
the
product.
The end result.
Right. Yeah. The product being just the end result, the thing that you're trying to get towards. If the product is really good and you're really happy with the product and you enjoy it, ego plays no part in helping that at all. When you say, well, I want it this way and I want it this way because this is the thing that I want, like, I guess you can do that, but at the end of the day...
Well, because for some people, that's what prevents them from being able to enjoy the end product because they can't see that fingerprint so defined.
Yeah. And again, it's hard not to feel that. So I get why people do, you know what I mean? It's perfectly understandable why people feel that way, but I don't know. Anymore, I feel like, especially if you're going to do anything in the music industry, you have to be able to at least put that aside for part-time at least, because otherwise you're not really going to get anything done unless you were just lucky enough that you can just always have what you want, which, taste that silver spoon, man.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know,
that's
for the rest
downside
of us.
Too.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. Go ahead, guys.
No.
I was going to say, I think what it comes down to is like, there is an ego to it. I think it just depends on the parameters that projects are started with. I don't know, in your experience talking to people or seeing bands operate, you know, from your sort of your history you shared with us, it's like a lot of times bands will start and like there's not a clearly defined leader, or there's not a clearly defined idea on how we're all going to write songs, or I'm going to write it and you guys can contribute, or like however it works. And I've been in bands that have worked a million different ways, and they all have their they're valid points, and obviously a lot of it's down to just the people making it work. Right. But in my experience, especially being a drummer, not getting a lot of credit for what you do as a drummer, I saw a lot of times people would bicker about the stupidest shit. I had this chord, and I wouldn't. Your grandma, I hate her. You're like, what? My grandma? What? That has nothing to do with an E minor, right? And you're like, what's going on here? And like, I'm like, well, I'm over here. Like, I lost 6 pounds playing for the last hour. Does anybody care? Okay, I'm doing nothing. I'll just run off a cliff.
Right.
So you get to this point where it's like, when I started wanting to have my songs be the focal point of a creative project that I was going to front and lead, and it's been refined over the years, and even and refined a lot in Cruel Curses, the one thing I started Cruel Curses with when I sent Nick the demos, when I've had drummers come in, when I asked Jeff to join, because I knew Jeff before, and our timetables never lined up, but eventually they did, is like, hey, I write all the parts. I got it figured out. What I need from you is to come in, be a badass live player, and when we get in a room and I have the ideas figured out, we're gonna polish the turd together, kind of thing,
Right. But,
and that is still just as important as the guy who came up with the riff or the chord progression or the bass line or whatever. It's like nobody really knows, or even it's not important to your enjoyment of the music, who played, if I played drums on the album.
Exactly.
I personally take pride in it because I bust my ass. Like, who wrote the lead guitar part? Who wrote the bass line? Doesn't really matter. They're performing it. It's like I've always explained the analogy. Like, I give them the house plant. I'm like, here's your house plant. Now you got to water it and not let it die. I don't remember the fucking bass line anymore. It's your job now. Like,
yeah.
I'm done. Like, I got it together. And now we spend 10 hours in a room running this part 100 times until we're all, good. Like, that's not me. That's everybody doing it. So like,
take me back to square one of that. When this plan, this framework you're talking about, where you can write these parts, you can make these house plants. take me back to the first day when you give everybody their house plant. What was that like when you first started getting this off the ground?
I don't know. I think it's been the same way since we started. I don't think our creative process has changed. Mm-hmm. But typically how it is just in general is like, I think at this point, like, these guys just know how it's going to go, so we don't belabor the process anymore.
Right.
But it's just like, okay, for like something like Exorcism, we actually have a song. Exorcism is very loosely the third part in a four-part long song kind of thing that we did. Like, when COVID happened, obviously, everything stopped, and we were like, well, what do we do? And we're like, we can't play shows. And I was like, I've always wanted to write a 30 long song. And we're like, and nothing else to do. Let's figure it out.
Right.
So I wrote a bunch of parts. So typically when it comes to doing something like that, I come in, and when we used to have a drummer, I would show the drummer the drum part. I'd show if the focal point was the bass line or guitar part, I'd show the guys, Jeff or Nick, this is what you're going to play. And we'd show it, and everybody gets their part together. And then you just layer on, and everybody's playing their part. Great. Let's keep running it. And then it's just like that. It's just sort of like a conveyor belt. You're Frankensteining it together, and everybody's getting their hands on it, and everybody's feeling it out. And Nick will be like, hey, what if I put on an octave and try this? It's like, oh, that's cool. Just like, what if I play it up here instead of down here? Like, and then everybody's like moving together like a school of fish, and that happens as a band. Mm-hmm. So the last 5 years almost, I've played drums on all of our albums because I've always written the drums. And our last drummer, Brian, who was like the only other person to play drums on our albums, him and I got along really well. We were very different drummers, but we came together really well.
Nice.
In terms of like creative, just playing. Like, he came from a different school of thought and I did, but we never clashed. It was always really cool.
Love it when that
so
works.
So for me, what we do now is like, I'll have a guitar on a stand next to me. I'll show Nick or Jeff the part, and I'll be like, okay, this is the drum beat I'm working with. And then we just like massage it. Cause it's not like I come in, I'm like, here's a demo, I'll see you on stage in 3 weeks. It's not like that.
That's
I don't want to take too much credit. Like, you guys just learn it. And it's like, we're a cover band. It's cause it's not like that. There's a lot of sculpting of the proverbial clay, because it doesn't matter if I wrote the riff that Nick is playing or Jeff is playing or whatever. Like, it takes time for everybody to feel comfortable playing it. And then we perform it on an album. I don't play the bass lines on the album. I don't play the lead guitar parts. That's their job. That's their thing. And then they figure out ways, like Nick will add a harmony sometimes, or like when it's a guitar solo, I'm not going to tell him how to play a guitar solo. I'm going to be like, you just do things that make me go, I shouldn't play guitar anymore. You know what I mean? And then like, there'll be times where it's like, hey Jeff, I have a bass fill idea, or like, I'm hearing a little something. Can you figure something out? And like, they understand that they are my ideas, they are my songs. And that's where, like, when you said, oh, the ego is not precious, I'm not going to lie and say I don't have an ego. If I didn't, it's the thrust of how we write music, is I want to hear my songs the way I hear them in my head.
Right.
These guys are cool enough to be like, yeah, I'm not going to keep, like, because there's people, I'm sure you've met them, like, somebody could have a great idea, and that guy just wants to be the contrarian.
Exactly.
Well, I want to change it because I don't, because you wrote it, and I want to change it.
Exactly.
These guys, there's plenty of times these guys are like, what the fuck is this shit? But they don't say it. And, like, I can see it on their face. I'm like, all right, here's your guitar part. All right, here's the bass line. And they're just like,
What the fuck are we doing?
And then the best compliment
the best
compliment I've ever gotten from them both is like they've learned that like even if they don't see it, they know that I do, and it always comes out fine.
See, and that's
and
why
I'm like that's the biggest heartwarming thing these guys have ever. I think Nick is the one who said it, but Jeff said it in his own way. Is like they don't question me anymore when it's like, especially because now we don't have a drummer who plays in a room with us. I'm playing the drums, so they're not even hearing my guitar part or my vocals, and then the keyboards. I play all those, so they're like missing a giant chunk of music, and they're like, "Hope this doesn't sound like asshole barbecued." Like, hope, you know. But luckily, they're like, "No, it'll come out fine." Yeah. Like, they trust me.
And it always has.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing right there. That's
Is that
trust.
From Ikea?
Guaranteed. Guaranteed.
Yeah. I know why I pointed at you. Like, so it's like, yeah, I bought it. It's me.
It's your fault.
Buy one, get one. The meatballs.
So that's an interesting thing. And that is the part where people, you know, not everybody can be Prince, where you write everything, play everything, and everybody's just going to willfully play it. Mm-hmm. And that does set up a weird hierarchy sometimes, because some people start to feel like they're not included, or, you know, they're not able to put their stamp on it. So one of the things you brought up that I wanted to ask you about is when you're demoing these things and you're writing these things, if you're not bringing it done, as it were, mm-hmm. how do you present it to everybody? Because one of the things I caught from you and I gleaned from listening to your music and why I asked you right away was it very much smacked of me as an idea that was completed before it was realized.
I mean, they are. They, before I come to them, especially with something like, and again, it's not to sound like, but it's like an 18-minute song, like it's not like I have everything laid out before I come to them. There's times where I'll have like 4 minutes of the exorcism thing written and figured out, and then we'll play, and then I'll be like, you know, guys, this should go longer, you know, because we're working on the next one, that there's like a second part of that exorcism song, and they're going to be combined to be one big song.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was times where it was like, well, we're going to change this. We're going to go back. And Nick was like, really? Like, okay. So they have to ride the wave sometimes. Cause sometimes especially with a song that is like, Jeff calls them Oops All Bridges. Cause it's just like a new part it's not like, here's a verse, here's a chorus, here's a verse. And then we jam for 19 minutes. No, they're all new parts all the time. That was our gimmick with it, is like,
no repeating.
They're like, we really don't repeat stuff. There's motifs and stuff, but it's like new stuff. Dynamics are changing, you know, time signatures are changing. Like, and like, that's just for us, just fun. Cause it's like, you know, 4 minute songs are awesome too. There's a challenge to writing a hopefully, you know, subjectively, a good 4 minute song.
Right.
And keeping it interesting for 4 minutes rather than just like, you know, like at my work, I hear on the speaker all day like this pop music, which again, those people are making a lot of money, good for them, but like it's like a chorus for 90 million seconds, and I just want to like shove my head into a vat of acid and call it a day. I'm like, I couldn't do it.
Bare minimum, four choruses.
Yeah, they're like,
and
then we're
going to
triple up on the last one, but you just did the chorus 4 times. That's right. It's 87 times of a chorus. You're like, welcome to the fourth circle of hell. I'm like, oh, shit, it's Josh Groban again. So it's like, you know, when it comes to having that, it is done. It is completed. There are ideas, but I would be lying if I said, like, just because all the parts are written and then I show them to the guys and the guys learn them, and then we rehearse it, and then like we, you know, we figure stuff out, and like we'll talk about tempos and stuff like that, and like, does this seem too long, or like, you know, this is the melody I'm thinking of for the vocals, what do you guys think, you know, like we'll kind of go over like those things together. There are many times where it's like I don't hear it until it's done still, like even though I have all the parts written, I'm like, oh, that's what it sounds like. Cool, I didn't realize that was happening. And then they'll be like, that's cool, and I'm like, yeah, it's cool. I didn't know it was going to happen like that. You know, I was like, oh, good, thank God. Like, mm-hmm. there's like, I think that happens with anybody. It's like sometimes you put like ingredients together in a, you know, goulash, and you're like, hope it tastes delicious. And you're like, oh no, it is rat poison. Shit again. You know, that's kind of it. But it is thought out. I mean, I try, but like, there's still just like a level of like, because I think if it were to go to the way you were saying, where it's like completely 110% figured out, I just record it and then ask people to play it live.
Yeah, that's what I'm
because
getting at.
Because those two guys, I need them to be
so
there.
So how do you present the demos that gives them that latitude still?
Well, they're very fast, so all I have to do is I have to be like, I sit down, I say, Jeff, this is the bass line. And I show it to him. I play the bass line. He learns it. He watches me. Nick, this is the guitar line. They play it together. We get it in time. I start playing the drum beat. We play it together. So it's like, mm-hmm. I don't demo at home because it would take me more time to demo something shitty. Like, you need to demo, guys. They learn stuff in like 30 seconds. Like, they're not challenged by anything I write at all. I'm like, look at this. And they're like, okay. I'm like, I thought it was kind of interesting. You learned it in 4 seconds. But that's how we do it. We just, because, and to me also, like, there's still that live feeling of, like, me picking up a guitar and showing you the part that I need you to play, and then us playing it, and then, like, the dynamic starts feeling, and Nick's, like, putting on more distortion, little things like that.
Yeah,
and
they start the human translation really makes a difference.
And that's not something that, like, one person is necessarily, like, conveying to, like, you know, like I said, if it was going to go to that level, I would just do it all by myself in a room. In a studio or whatever, and then ask them to play live. So, like, there is still, like, that last 10-15% of, like, the three of us, like, making the idea not theoretical, you know, because I demo it out. I demo it out at home, like, on acoustic guitars, and, like, I have a drum set at home and stuff, and I'll do stuff on my own to make sure that when I come in, I'm not wasting everybody's time. Like, I have nothing, and I'm going to come up with it on the spot. It's all thought out. It's not like they sit there and wait for me to come up with a guitar part for 45 minutes and, like, you know, like, play Sudoku or whatever.
Right.
You know? So it's like, I have it all figured out, but, like, the act of, like, having it all figured out and then the three of us, like, making sure that it works, that's like the end result of it. Like, that's not something that I do on my own. That's obviously them.
So there's two things you said in there that I really want to touch on. The first one is something
Sudoku.
That
I thought
yeah,
the same thing.
Of course. No, I'm more of a Scrabble guy.
Okay. So fancy.
Yeah, I do my best.
Triple word score over here.
So I know syllables.
One of the things that I noticed in your recordings, you know, truth be told, I'm a huge prog fan. That's my wheelhouse is prog music.
And just, I'm not sorry to cut you off. I hate that we are considered a prog band. I fought against it for years because I just like that.
You can't.
We're just rock. I know. It's like people love to put things in boxes. These guys told me to get over it because to me it's like a pinky extended thing. Like we've run into a lot of bands like, we're prog. And it's like, I don't want to be a prog band. Yes.
Prog rock.
Yeah.
Well, you see, know, and that's actually where I'm going with this.
I just want to be a rock band.
My experience with that, especially if you want to think about long songs, be early Genesis, early Pink Floyd, early King Crimson, stuff like that, where a lot of those songs were what you said your songs are not. It would be a verse, a chorus, maybe a bridge section, and then this huge expansive bit like Moby Dick, and then we stick the rest of the song at the end, where one of your songs are not like that at all. Like you said, they're oops all bridges. That's that's a very good way to couch them. Talk to me a little bit about what the arrangements look like and feel like to you as the performer, being that they don't have this A, B, A, B, A, B, C, B, 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 done structure.
Someone else talk.
I was going to say, this is where structured practice comes into play. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you look at something like Exorcism, right? We actually recently just put up a post where we had a whiteboard at the time, and we named every single little chunk of music. And so, you know, we would have it right in front of us so we could say, okay, Arabian Dracula is coming up, right? And we all know what that means. Yep. Nobody else does.
Dark
and no one can see the cuts. Like, no one knows where, you know, where one part starts. Or, well, I mean, you can hear the different parts, but no one knows where we, like, where Deleted. We in our minds, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, when you're performing live, it's just a matter of, you have that down under your fingers already, right? You don't have to think about, oh, I got to play a chorus now or whatever. Like, the next part is coming. And the only next part after Arabian Dracula is, what do we call it?
Sunshine
Deluxe. Explosion Deluxe.
Yeah, that's Sunshine Explosion Deluxe.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing after Arabian Dracula is Sunshine Explosion Deluxe. There's no guessing. That's what it is.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's, like I said at the beginning, that's where structured practice comes in, because you have to just know that that's the case, right? And you can't fall back on, oh, okay, I'll just play the chorus again because I've played it 6 times now and I can just, you know, like you were saying, you play it so many times at a certain point, it just becomes old hat. But now you have to make whatever, however many parts that we have in that song flow all together. And the only way to do that is to just hammer it a million times and to know, you know, to memorize that list. Even if you don't memorize the names, you know exactly what part is coming up, and you have to have the confidence to have that knowledge and to have that to have that know-how of like, well, that's the next thing that's coming up. And the only way to do that is to do it and then do it again and then do it again and then do it again and then do it 10 more times.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Until it's so ingrained in your head that that line now gets erased and one note seamlessly flows into the next. You know what I'm saying? That's how I'm answering that question.
Yeah, you can't
at least
second guess it, because if the whole band goes this way and you go that way, it's very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, our changes are very quick and we all have to be with it. Otherwise, the song isn't the song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the train is on the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to catch up. If what is this? It's hard to come in the middle of one of our riffs because it's like flipping and it doesn't flip this time.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know where you're at kind of within the thing.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. How do you handle your practices when somebody does fall off the tracks? Do you try to get back on, or do you start the piece over, or?
Well, it depends on how bad the train wreck
That's
is.
That's true. And how early on in the learning process we are. Because if it's later on, we all make mental notes what to go back over. So we'll finish a song and be like, anybody got a thing? Oh, part two. Oh, let's do this again.
Ah,
we all know.
Yeah.
So we'll come back and like re-practice and put the spotlight on those things.
Mm-hmm. Now we're pretty locked in on playing Exorcism and, you know, it takes up like a third of a normal set. So, it's pretty convenient in that regard. Like once you get it, you got it. But it is, in some sense, it's not really different than just playing a long song with a lot of parts. And you would think, oh, well, what's that like? How do you, because the biggest question people answer me, because like I said before, we have a song called Fables, Folklore and Other Assorted Fever Dreams, which is
I definitely wanted to talk about that one.
That's a 36-minute song, which was the first crack that we did at something like this, and then we had another one called Chronicles, which we recorded and it sat on a shelf. It was the companion to that one, and that was like 32 minutes, and we'll never probably play it live, but there was a lot of love poured into that. It's kind of like has a special place in my heart on that one. But anyways, moving on, those songs, they just have so many parts. You're like, oh well, if I learn my part, like Nick was saying, I'm just gonna roll into the next part and then roll into the next part. The hard part about it versus like even a long, because we have longer songs, but is like you don't really have like safe ground, right? Like if you mess up this riff, you don't get a reprieve. You mess the riff up, it's over. Like you gotta just be like, well, you know, and there's some things that to me personally, there's riffs that I really want to make sure I'm tight on and I want to hit, because if I mess them up, I've messed up that whole moment. Like,
right.
You know, it's not like, you know, and that happens in other songs where there's just riffs that are like a bridge, right? A bridge typically is like a unique section of a song that's not necessarily repeated. But it's like when you're playing something that's literally changing and changing, and it's changing every 30 seconds or 40 seconds or whatever, it can be a little bit to keep track of. And then on my end, I have to sing on top of it. So it's like remembering the lyrics and the melodies and like, you know, not going into cardiac arrest, you know, like while doing it. So it's like, it's a little different to me than just playing a 5-minute song, even if the 5-minute song has a lot of parts, because it's like this new thing and this dynamic is different. It's mainly the dynamics of like the performing a part, where it's like we're doing a punk thing and now it sounds like a 60s waltz thing, and then now it's a psychedelic thing, and now it's like a really slowed down blues waltz, and then now it's this creepy organ thing, and now there's a guitar solo, and now it's this riff, and it's like you just roll on. And that's what's fun for us, because we feel like we're like, I feel like I'm chasing a song like that versus like even our all other songs that are longer or whatever, they feel safer to me. Like, oh, like, you know, like I'm going to come back to this chord progression. I'm going to come back to this melody. I'm going to sing these words again. There's a little bit of like, it might be a mental thing, but like there's a little bit of like comfort there, even with longer, bigger songs that we have. Like, but these like Exorcism and then the Fables and stuff, like, Why is it happening? What's that's over. I don't even know. Like sometimes you get like whiplash a little bit, and then you're like, well, you know. So
yeah, and that's kind of one of the things that I'm curious about, because when you're having pieces of music like this, there's two things going on, obviously. One, what the listener is experiencing, and the other one, which people lots of times I feel don't think about, what it's like for you. What is it like when you're, I got no other way to put it, when you're inside one of these 18-minute pieces and you're 9 minutes deep and you know...
You're just rolling with it, and you know where
you're at in your script, but you know you still got half the movie to act out. What what is the sense of the experience like objectively as you're going through it, or is it just constantly moving through those lines?
Ooh.
I feel like it's different every time. Some nights we'll hit a certain spot. I'm like, wow, we're already there. Other times it'll be like, oh, we got like 2/3 of this song still left. Like, it's surprising to me.
Yeah. I'm tired already.
Yes.
And we still have 10 minutes.
Exactly. Or sometimes it's like you finish it and you're like, I could do it again. Like, I got the energy. The crowd was into it. And it's different. The audience we usually open now with Exorcism. They don't know they're about to sit there for 18 minutes and listen. We're just like, hey, everybody, we're Crew Courses. We go into it 18 minutes later. And it's surprising to see where people cheer, where people like listen and really get focused. We played to a bit of a younger crowd that was all two-step dancing. That's something new to us. I know. The whole crowd just like moving to us doing weird time changes for 18 minutes is crazy. But it's like in my head, it's different every time. What about you, Nick?
I was gonna say it's kind of how long we've been playing it, you know, because we've been playing Exorcism so long anymore that like it all just kind of flows, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter where I am. If I'm 9 minutes deep into it, it's like this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. I know where the next thing is coming. It's under my fingers so good I can just enjoy myself, you know. When we were first playing it, it was the opposite of that. It was like, okay, this part comes next. I need to click this thing. I need to make sure my hands are here. You know, I need this tone here. And like, it was running through the Rolodex of like, okay, that's done. What's the next thing? Okay, that's done. What's the next thing?
Yeah.
But now that we've done it so many times and we have played in front of people and done the whole thing successfully, it's now I can just sit back and enjoy it because my fingers know what to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
back
autopilot.
Autopilot. Back to that structure practice.
Do they feel to you like a song, or does it feel to you like an album that just doesn't have any breaks?
No, I experience it just as one piece. Yeah, you know what I mean? I'm like when I'm in the middle of it, I'm immersed into the whole thing as a whole. Not like I said before, where there's sections. You know what I mean?
When you were chatting with House of I, you had brought up about like the way that's how people like if you're gonna try to do anything regardless, it's like you're dealing with short attention spans.
And right.
Like, you're always like most people, I think, who are creative don't want to be constrained by any sort of time. They're like, this is what I did. Like putting up shorts for clips. Like you're like, no, go listen to the whole interview. Like don't listen to just 30 seconds. There's so much more. Don't just look at this one image. Look at the whole thing. Like, and I think that is there's gold to mine there for like the creative struggle, probably. Like, okay, how do I make an awesome 4-minute song that still does the things I wanted to do?
You're right.
But also at the same time, like the single idea, I think we've always joked like, yeah, it's a single. It's an 18-minute long single, but it's a single. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, that's, and the feedback that I've gotten from a lot of my friends on it is like, they're like, because it doesn't really repeat things. It's like a piece of music. It's a song, but it's not a traditional sort of structured thing because like there is no chorus. I'm not going to get to hear this hook again. That riff, that was cool. I like that riff. I'm not going to hear it again unless I rewind 45 seconds. So like that, the nature of that, I think lends itself to just being like, it's definitely not for everybody. And Nick always says, who gives a fuck? Like, this is what we want to do. And I think that's important to remember sometimes because I get wrapped up in that stuff, but it's like, I don't know, like, you know, I always had the really romantic idea that some like long haul trucker's driving down a road in Nevada or something. He's got like 10 hours left and he finds some stupid song like that and he just puts it on. It becomes like his anthem, you know. It's like,
yes,
this long song, you can go on, you know, really interesting journeys with, like, that's why they have novellas or novels or fucking War and Peace on a bridge. You can achieve so much. And I think that looking at a song like it has to be 4 minutes and it has to follow this format, obviously there's a scientifical, you know, lab-tested reason why that works.
Yeah.
You know, why I'm hearing Josh Groban 100 times at work.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, damn you, Josh Groban. She is amazing or whatever. Fuck, you're sending them out. Fuck. But it's like, you know, there's also something to be said for like the weird people who like want to put on, and it's not even weird, but it's like, they want to hear a 25-minute song, and they don't want to hear a repeated chorus. And that for that moment in their life, that can be something that a normal 4.5-minute song or even a 10-minute prog song, it could almost be something unique for them in that moment that, like, a normal song probably couldn't achieve. And you can do so much weird shit. Like, you know, did you listen to Fables or did you listen
to? Yep,
okay,
yep.
So that one, Jeff actually put that the best way as well. It's almost like vignettes because you can more hear where we were like, this is the, like, because sometimes, and a lot of people do this too, I think, they'll hear songs in color Or they'll sometimes, like, to me, when I feel like I'm hitting on it, I'll get an image of something.
Right.
That one I can almost hear the colors flow into each other. Whereas something like Exorcism, that feels more like a consistent piece of music. Whereas like the Fables feels like this is this thing and it flowed into this next section, then it flowed into this next section. That felt more like connective tissue, but you could see like this is orange and this is green and this is purple a little bit to me from a listening perspective.
Right.
Whereas Exorcism feels like a multitude of colors that come together and split apart and come back and then come together in weird, you know, moments. Like, oh, it's green and orange. What's that? It's ugly, but I'm sure what's going on. It's puce. I don't know. So it's like, you know, you get those things. So it's like a different approach to the same methodology of writing a longer piece of music. But with those things, you look at them and it's like, if you sat down and listened to one of our albums that was like four or five songs, we have EPs, maybe you'd get the same experience because, you know, we're a rock band. It's not like we do, you know, a bunch of different genres, but I don't know. I think there's something interesting about that. And also, last thing before I shoot myself for talking too much is like, when I forgot what I was going to say because now I'm just
don't shoot yourself.
No, yeah. I don't want to. No.
Don't do
I
it.
Don't want to do it.
Don't
no.
do it.
Oh no.
Connective tissue vignettes.
Vignettes. Colors.
Colors.
Mom, help! I want my mom. The lights are bright. I'm scared.
You want one of my cruel
puce. Puce.
This was
help.
This was one of the things I wanted to ask you about because.
Your shoes are great, by the way.
They
you.
Are. Yeah.
I've been wanting to tell you the whole time.
Thank
They're
you.
Very nice.
I'm steeped in long songs and weird music.
Sure.
And one of the first pieces of long music that got to me was Pink Floyd's Adam Hart Mother Suite.
Yeah.
Don't know if you're familiar with that
or
not.
Uh-huh.
The Adam Hart Mother Suite was deliberately written to take up the one side of the record, but it was all piecemealed together. It wasn't performed together. It was all just this cacophony of things that was stitched together.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
And then they have pieces like Echoes, you know, which is another 27 minutes or whatever. And that's definitely a song you can tell it wasn't chunked together. It was this performance.
Mm.
So it sounds to me like that's kind of what you're talking about. You have, you know, the Fever Dream one, which is all of these pieces that got stitched together. And then Exorcism, which is a bit more cohesive, though they have some similar DNA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what that was, if there was a fundamental difference you guys experienced in the path to getting from one to the other that kind of made it so one ended up being this more contiguous linear thing where the other one is still kind of reeks of its patchwork.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually a great question. Seth, you want to chime in? You remember when we were writing it together?
It was a great experience.
We'll be right back. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next time on...
I
tried. I tried to add a little cumin.
If I may.
Yes.
I mean... I guess we could chalk that up to... Oh, thank you. 2 months. I could... I might chalk that up just to, again, to the practice of it again. You know what I mean? Like, when we were doing Fables, this was brand new to us. We had... None of us had ever written anything this long or even tried to perform something this long, you know?
Like, and it's still the longest one of all the ones we've done.
When he came up to us with it, it was like... God, this is going to be awesome, but I don't know how we're going to do it. You know what I mean? So that, I mean, you know, your first try of anything, right? The first pancake always sucks.
Right.
Not that Fable sucks. I'm just saying, you know, so by the time we got to Exorcism, this is our third rodeo
Big
here
one.
with long form music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we kind of nailed down not just the process, but like how these things ought to go together rather than just like, here's parts, put them together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like focusing more on the flow of it all rather than... I don't know why I just did that. But,
the flow, man.
That was a flow.
The flow.
I flowed.
Yeah. And
so what are some of the big things you learned that helped the flow be?
Ooh, the flow. Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
Listening back to it, performing
for sure.
it, getting feedback from people who listened to it. But it wasn't like a deliberate thing like that way, like you were saying, like kind of like maybe the more like the patchworkness of it was a negative because it's still to me when I listen to Fables I still hear it as one thing.
We
behind the curtains it was recorded in 13 sections and it was when we wrote it and we would practice it before we went and recorded it as a big piece of music. Every time we nailed it, we would, okay, we're now playing to part 10, now we're playing to part 12. It was 13 parts of music that we wrote as one big continuous thing. But I think what I don't think there's anything wrong with going even back to that more vignette style of like they're short stories or something like that, right? If you want to keep using weird analogies, not you, me, but it would be like the idea, because Chronicles, the one that came after that one, which was basically just a studio recording, that had more of the same feel as the Exorcism one, where it just felt more like it just kept moving forward, and you couldn't see the sutures. You couldn't see where, oh, this is where they probably stopped, or this is, that dynamic is done, it's moving here.
Right.
Like, if you looked at Exorcism and we told you this was a part we recorded and this is a part we recorded, I would wager a pretty good guess you would probably be wrong, where we would, like, this was, no, this 5 minutes was actually one part we recorded.
Right.
You know, it's like, because you can't, you almost can't treat them as separate songs with separate, like, because every section, Nick and I would pick up a different guitar, right? Like, well, I'm gonna use my Gretsch on this section, or we need this kind of tone, right? And typically in a song, that's only gonna happen, you know, for a bridge. But like, that's happening every 30, 40 seconds.
Exactly.
You're changing the bass tone, or we're adding more verb onto the snare. And it's like, things like that occur in songs, obviously, but not at the frequency, I think, that typical songs have. And that's not like a good or bad thing. It's just
a difference.
It's just the nature of writing an 18-minute piece of music that continuously changes versus, like, you know, something that's like, okay, we're going to go back to this and we're going to play this again and we're going to use this sound again and we're going to, you know, we're going to, that doesn't happen here. So it's like, you always have to kind of do that. But Exorcism, I think, is like, the only thing that repeats is the beginning and the end. And it only repeats in the way that it's the same parts, but it's played in reverse. So it's like a reverse coda at the end of the song.
That's what I was just going to say.
Like, and that's the only way that, like, we let people know that, like, it's over. It's something, you're getting to the end of it. Like, that was the gimmick of Exorcism. It's like, we're going to reverse the intro and change up. Like, there's harmonies here now, and we're doing this different. And it's like, but that's it. I mean, I think it just comes down to not. I would go back to doing the vignette thing, too, again, because I think it still had merit. But I like the way Exorcism flows better, because I think if you played it for somebody, they wouldn't. They wouldn't really know. They'd just be like, is this a song? Like, I don't know what's happening anymore, and I'm hungry.
How important is it to you guys to have songs that the listeners don't get everything on the first try?
Massively.
Yeah, I think that's great.
How important is it that they don't get it on the first try?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, like, I don't write anything, but, like, I've stopped caring about what people think about it, really. Yeah. So, like, if they go, I don't know what's happening, I say, good.
No, I mean, I mean more in the sense that you can do clever tricks like invert the intro to make mm-hmm. your outro. That's not something, especially in an 18-minute piece of music, even if you're used to listening to things critically, mm-hmm. you're necessarily going to pick out on the first go-round just by the nature of the space in between. But that's like almost an Easter egg for someone who's going to brave your songs 5-10 times and it hits somebody. That's more what I'm asking. How important is it to you guys to bake things into it that people you know aren't going to get on the first try? That's one of those things that it doesn't even matter who you are. It's damn near impossible someone's going to catch that on the first go around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It is. I mean, there's motifs where, like, certain notes of a guitar riff are inverted a certain way and they come back as a lead line later or something. Like,
right,
there's
right.
little things like that. And some of that happens by total absent-mindedness of, like, you are still writing something that is, like you kind of said, it's contiguous, right? It's like, if you want to, it's a landmass, it has to be one thing that, like, this riff that was at 2 minutes, how do you go from this riff and then 7 minutes in between and get over here? It has to kind of make sense. You can't just, like, that's the other thing is, like, people think that you could just, like, change genres every 30 seconds and just be like, oh, it's crazy. It's like, to me, I would be like, okay, you're trying. Like, there's a middle ground between, like, shell-shocking somebody for the sake of shell-shocking them. Like, wow, they're changing a bunch. And, like, wow, that made sense. And, again, that's subjective. People could probably listen to Exorcism and be like, this sucks, and why is it happening, and I'd rather kill myself.
Well, that's the finest, like, line, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope. And, again, it's subjective. Like, you could listen to it and be like, I don't know what the fuck is going on, and I have to talk to these guys? God damn it. You know? Or you could have been like, cool, wow.
Well, do you find that, I mean, I know you can't really think about what people are going to think about your music. You can't worry about whether or not anybody's
going to. Oh,
I do. Well, to
and
some
I shouldn't,
degree.
And I always try to take his advice, which is, don't give a fuck.
Well, you can't to some degree.
Right.
It's a fruitless endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
But I go to Publix and buy fucks BOGO all the time. And I'm like, I got so many fucks!
See, that's the thing. You got to be Spider-Man up in a tree. No fucks to give.
There you
that's
go. True. There you go.
So, I got to look. I have no idea what that means, but I'm just like, he can go so many other places that are way higher. Why is he in a tree?
That's right.
Okay.
There's a meme, one of my favorite memes of all time. It's Spider-Man sitting in a tree with his feet up, and it says, here's me not giving a fuck.
Oh.
Spider-Man doesn't have to do shit. He can just sit in the tree.
Yeah.
So what are some of the challenges you think for the listener, do you ever think that, hey, we've put all of this time and effort and to some degree a lot of specificity into doing clever things in this music, and we might have made something that's dreadfully inaccessible?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Every night.
I
on the car right here.
I like
right
I,
now a little bit.
In the elevator.
To me, it's I don't want to say it's surprising, but it's always a nice feeling to hear that someone listened to one of these all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the time I get I listened to a couple of minutes of it. It was cool, you know, and it's just like, yeah, but like a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
There's 36 minutes of this music that we worked really hard on, and you.
Do you think that if you broke it up into songs, people would not say that?
Here's my thing. No. Is my thing. No.
Love it.
Here's my thing.
No.
My thing is one word, no.
Because when we were first doing Fables, I can't tell you how many people came up to us going, oh, don't, instead of the 30-minute, 6-minute song, break it into small things.
And that was before they even heard it half the time, too.
No, we don't want it. It's one big thing. It is meant to be absorbed all as one big thing. Like, it's not meant to be piecemeal. You're not supposed to throw it on a shuffle thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's meant to be here. And if you choose not to listen to the whole thing, that's on you. But like, I maybe I forgot what your original question was, but
breaking it up into pieces,
pieces, like, yeah, we have thought about that.
Well,
and we immediately reject it
even
because
if you
that's
did,
not what it's supposed to be,
like,
yeah.
Like the kitschy things that bands mm-hmm. have, when they used to write long songs, did, where you would just say, okay, this is all Fables section one, section mm-hmm. two, mm-hmm. section three. They would be able to be played contiguously, but there would mm-hmm. be like track breaks.
Here's where it goes back to that Precious Ego thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our buddies who we've been recording at their studio, they're called Audibility. They're in Tampa. Billy and Greg, they own the studio. They've mixed and mastered the last 5 things we've done.
Nice.
They're amazing. Amazing.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they're the only reason those things work and sound any good as a record.
Give them your business.
Yes. Jinx. They were in the original when we came to them with the idea of Fables, because that was the first thing we did with them. I remember Greg being like, because we recorded it in chunks. We didn't record a 36-minute. That would have destroyed Pro Tools.
Mm-hmm.
But they were like, guys, this is kind of cool. You should maybe not like isolate 99% of the listening audience who would dig music like this. But it was like, well, then why? It's almost like I get the mentality of like, well, you can have your cake and you can eat it too, right? Like, your cake is, it's still a 36-minute continuous song if nobody presses any buttons, but if they do, they can just go where they want. I'm like, yeah, but me personally, it's like, that wasn't the way it was intended, and if somebody really wants to listen, and again, I'm not saying I'm not shooting myself in the foot for people listening to it or wanting to listen to it. It's a big ask.
Well, it's not totally about that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like, it was intended to be something, like I said, like that trucker on a lone highway finds it and it's his anthem, right? Like, that's just a romantic idea, but it's like, you gotta be in a very specific place to want to listen to something like that for that long, you know, like, I mean, it's no different than listening to an album you like that's 45 minutes, in my opinion. But you have to commit. And I think that that's the thing with music, is like we were talking about the single culture. Nobody wants to commit to anything. Nobody wants to put on a 36-minute song or an 18-and-a-half-minute song. Mm-hmm. They don't, like, not nobody, but there's not, like, you know, not everybody.
They're not beating down the door for it.
No, mm-hmm. They're not like, hey, man, you got any more of those 20-minute long songs in there? Huh? I'd like a strawberry flavored one. It's like, all right, Diabetes Donnie, we don't have it. It's like, that's not what's going on. Well, we do, actually. We got another one. But yeah, I'm just saying, like, you know, I got blacked out. But, you know.
You look know. Like it.
Well, that's...
ask another question.
Yeah, well, that gets me to the point, this whole singles thing. If you have singles... In my personal opinion,
shingles.
Yeah, shingles doesn't care.
I don't want to do that.
That's what the commercial told me.
Yeah.
If you have singles and you know you can put them out, mm-hmm. if you were making a traditional record mm-hmm. and you had these bite-sized pieces, this is one of the things that I personally feel strange about, and I like to ask bands about. And in fact, what I was asking House of Eye about: do you feel strange having to give away a portion of the movie before you can watch mm-hmm. the whole thing? So mm-hmm. in your case, it's really whole movie or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's it. The single is 18 minutes.
Yes.
I mean, the single is 18 minutes, and 18 minutes is a long... I think it only seems long when you're saying, oh, it's one song, and it's 18 minutes. If it was 4 songs and it was considered an EP, you'd be like, oh, that's not a big deal.
Exactly.
It's almost like the perception of it manipulates someone into thinking it's something different.
100%.
And I'm not saying that there's not truth to it's 18 minutes and you can't skip to the part you like. Yes, that is a reality. But there's also, like, we did between Fables and Chronicles and Exorcism, we put out two EPs. There were four songs on one and six songs on the other, and they were three, four, or five minute songs. They were normal songs. You know,
normal.
Well, yeah, you know, like they fit the mold, you know. So it was like, and there's nothing wrong with
it. How did that feel?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
That's probably what we're going to do after this next one that we put out. We'll probably go back and make a, you know, six song EP or something, or, you know, because our goal is to kind of do like they used to do in the 70s, like put something out every year.
Yes.
I do like the idea of, like, I've seen bands do this before. It's not an original idea in any sense, but like the, like you put a single out every month or something, and at the end it's a culmination. It's an album, but you put a song out every month.
Right.
You know, or I had an idea that I thought would have kind of been cool is to do. I've seen bands do this before where it's like you make like the rock record and then you make like acoustic, like other world versions of the same songs.
Yeah.
And like I thought, oh, that'd be cool to do like six songs and then do like put both versions out at the same time. It's like, so neither version is considered preferential. It's just like, here's the moon and the sun version of these things. Listen to them. You always want to find cool concepts, gimmicks, you know, ways. I call them gimmicks, but it's like you want to find cool ways to, one, challenge yourself, but also like give somebody, like, you know, you put, especially when you're like a no-name band and you're just trying to get on any communication line you can and connect with people, you want to find ways that like you're 10 seconds in the sun when you put out your song, maybe it can be 12, right? Or you could be 15. Oh, I got 15 seconds this time. So you got to find cool ways. Like when we put out an 18-minute song, whether people like it or not, it's a conversation starter. And
there
when
you
we
go.
Play live, mm-hmm. live, it really works live. That's really where it comes alive, is because in a live setting, people are there to see a band perform. And then you see a band perform, and hopefully we don't shit the stage. You see a band perform for
maybe hopefully you do. Because
when we, well, that could be fun. That's another kind of show. We're working on it. But it's like, that's a kind of show where you're like, oh, they didn't stop. Like, you know, recently we played it. When we played that 18, we played Exorcism for, it was down in Cape Coral a couple months ago. We played, there was a bunch of people in the front of the stage, and this kid kept yelling out, is this one song?
Yep.
Like, he didn't know what was going on. He loved it. You know, mm-hmm. it's still going. You know? He's like, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think he was screaming about how he bought like a turtle. I bought a turtleneck at Kmart. And I was like, I don't know what he's saying anymore.
He's transported.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, this guy's in another world. He's remembering Graham's turtleneck buying spree. But yeah, I think that stuff is cool. But it's just a commitment. I think that's all it comes down to. And it's the ego of it for me where it's like, no, I want you to fucking commit to listening to this thing or
something that's else. That's what I'm wondering. It seems to me that, and line this up for me, it seems to me to be that for all three of you, it's important for you to be challenged by the music you're playing, get it under you, and climb this mountain together. Does that then inherently make it, I don't want to say important, but somehow inherent that you have to challenge the listener too? You want them to make the commitment. You want them to feel the gratification like from challenging that themselves that you got from challenging yourselves birthing this thing?
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm with you, Ryan. I don't think I've ever really thought about
it like
that.
Yeah.
But now that you say that,
sure.
I mean, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
The payoff is in the marathon and you got to run.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. Right.
You know, that's the other thing about chopping it up into chunks is like you can't always have what you want. And sometimes you really got to commit to something. And like,
right.
If you don't want to commit, then you don't get the thing. You know what I mean?
My question for you, since you listened to it, however many times you poked around, if you would have known, if I told you it was an 18-minute song, but you could skip around to different parts, would that immediately have dispelled any sort of illusion that it actually was one piece of music? Or you're like, well, it is, but it's not really.
Well,
like,
I'm an outlier in that just because I come from the prog world.
So you
and
like that stuff?
Yes, and I've been forced to break up 45-minute pieces of music for distribution and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is just self-disclosure or whatever. This is a world that I'm very familiar with over the last 25 years. So
for you listening to it, was it like,
well, it was,
I wanted
it
to stop, or was you like, no, this was cool?
Yes.
And again, it's not going to hurt my feelings. Yeah,
no.
Like,
for me, and this is one of the things why I ask how you imagine it for listeners, because for me, and what I find special about the music, type of music that you guys write, and why I like want to share this with people, is that it is something that you have to make the commitment for. And the payoff is getting on, taking the ticket and taking the ride.
Yeah.
And and I don't mean to wax too poetic now, but we're in a bit of a time now where taking the ticket and taking the ride is like, dude, we can barely commit to that.
Yeah.
And I like to commit to that.
Yeah.
And I find that the more people can do that with art, regardless of whether or not it's visual art, any type of medium, if you can challenge yourself with it a little bit more, the payoff is you can find more things you like.
Bingo.
Definitely.
So when I see a tall order in front of me, all I can think to myself is, yay, there has to be something in there for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I started listening to your music and I'm 5 minutes deep into it, I'm waiting to see if this next thing's for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
I like to go on the ride. So I'm the wrong one to ask, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
But I do appreciate the lawn music, and I appreciate it whether or not it's patchwork and, you know, I'm a Mr. Bungle fan or Phantomos, you know, things where there's a lot of chaos, but sewing it together in sometimes a deliberately less than common digestible way makes people like me or people who are, I don't know what, up for the challenge, almost more baited by it. It's like, okay, you want me to listen to 20 minutes, 6 minutes song, game on.
You think I won't do it?
Yeah.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll fucking do it.
Yeah.
And also, I think that there's an element of it, too, where it's just sort of like, it's all subjective, right, at the end of the day. So it's like, for the people it doesn't work for, cool. Not everything's for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You can't win with that mindset anyway.
Right.
So it's like, you know, you might as well just enjoy the people who really... Because the people who like something like
really
this, they're
like
going to
like it.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to really like it. Like the people that are fans of ours and friends of ours who really like the long music that we make really like it. And the people that are friends of ours who like prefer our, more traditional sort of songs, they're like, yeah, this is cool. But I like it when, you know, the song ends in a timely manner. And I can like, you know.
Yeah.
There's a chorus.
Yeah. Like, I remember something because you played it more than once. But it's like, I get it. But that's also the last thing I'll say about the long songs is you kind of said, like, is there something in there for me? Is like, our sort of twist on doing a long song, like, you know, and it's not to admonish Pink Floyd or any, like, what was that band, Stone Smoker or whatever? I remember when I first
Sleep. Sleep.
Yeah, I told you guys about long songs. You're like, smoker. Oh, Sleep. It's like, plenty of bands have made two-hour-long music.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of that stuff is like they drone on a riff forever or they, you know, it's a song with
a big bridge. Or there's a huge freak-out section.
Yeah. And it's like my thing that I thought kind of just gave it a little bit of our own twist is like it's a new part, it's a new part, it's a new part, it's a new part. It could be very like, holy shit, squirrel kind of thing for people. Or it's also like you're like, wow, watermelon, wow, strawberry, wow, persimmon, water, that's not watermelon, what the fuck's happening? Like, you kind of get, you, like, that's our thing for us because, like, this you were saying, it just keeps you, you just keep getting something new that hopefully feels a part of the whole, but
right.
It's not the, like, man, they play this riff for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
We can write a 30-minute song and play,
well,
play four riffs.
Well, that's jam band, that's yeah. a whole
we
other
jam,
end of the pool.
We jam, we like to jam, but, like, I still think, like, there's vocals all over. Like, I'm singing the whole time. It's not like we don't play for 7 minutes and we just let him solo. It's like, to me, it's like, and again, it's not a brag. It's just more of, like, that to me was, like, that's easy to play a riff for 6 minutes and like I got this cool riff, let's play it for 6 minutes. Okay, we're gonna jam on it. I'm changing it up another six, like you could go forever on anything. I think the challenge for us, and we hoped it would entice people to listen to it who maybe wouldn't want to, is like, oh, it's changing. You keep them guessing a little bit.
Yes.
And live, I think it really shines in that way, because live nobody knows, they're like eating their chips and tortilla at the dive bar and they're like, what's happening, you know? And that's what's cool. Or they're like, shut up, we hate you. And I'm like,
well,
sorry.
Normally I want to get everybody out of here on something fun, but I'm going to get you guys out of here on something kind of loaded. And you
is it a baked potato?
Yes.
Oh, we're about to
chives.
I'm so fucking hungry.
If it doesn't got chives, it's not loaded.
No.
The bacon bits, sour cream, chives.
Yeah. Cheese.
Yeah.
Cooked.
So that's the fun one.
Cooked.
The baked potato question.
Sure. Sorry.
No, you're good.
Wasted it.
I want you each to answer this, and you can be as esoteric as you want. I don't care.
That was his way of saying, Ryan, don't do all the talking.
No.
No, it's okay.
I would just say that.
Oh.
I'm not like that.
Oh, okay. All right.
This podcast took a turn.
So
he just kept my heart empty. I'll shut up, please. Go ahead.
No, I'm keeping the hotel full for y'all.
Yeah,
yeah,
yes.
Baby.
Oh, man.
So this is really the thing I want to ask. You said some of your live performances.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it clicks. That's really where stuff like this can shine, because it can reek of its entire performance. You don't have to listen to it and imagine it. You can see it and experience it right there. And having been witness to pieces of music like that, I know how powerful it can be. I'm wondering, when you guys are performing this stuff or you're imagining performing it, what are the things that you're really hoping someone takes away from it when they realize it's ended?
Oh, man.
I kind of like when they are not sure. We've played for so long and we stop and like, what's the next thing? And then it's just quiet. And like, oh, I guess that's it. And it's like, I like the look on the face when they're like, it could have been 30 more minutes or nothing.
Yeah.
The old dog that's been shown a card trick look.
Yeah, that's it. They're like, not fooling me.
Yeah.
That's a rewarding one.
I could definitely piggyback off of that. Like the shock and awe of it, of just like, wait a minute, what time is it? Like, yeah. you how long has this been going on?
That was one song.
And I really hope that it's just like they can kind of let us do the heavy lifting. You know what I mean? I especially when I watch bands do, you know, maybe similar things or things that I think are really amazing and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I just stand there and watch, right? I'm not pulling out my phone. I'm not doing anything. And I just kind of get lost in whatever they're doing.
Amen.
Let them do the heavy lifting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just soak it in so that when you get to the end of that 36-minute song, you go, what did I just watch?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you have that really excited moment of like, we made it through that whole thing. That was amazing. And
it's providing the backdrop for some.
Yeah, exactly.
Mental latitude.
For sure.
And then the proverbial mind expanse.
Yeah. Yeah. Take my energy that I'm giving out. Absorb it. And just let me feed it to you. Let me just feed this energy to you. Just sit back. Let it happen. You know, enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
And you can see people in there. And I get so amped when I see someone who's just staring, you know, and they're just like, wow.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And I hope that's answering your question. That's what I look for when I'm playing it. I hope that someone is having as good of a time as I'm having, but putting in zero effort.
That dude at Ormond Beach, we would play something and then he would go, and he would turn around to his girlfriend and be like, and we're on stage and he's just right there.
Yeah, David Copperfield who just made a tiger turn into a table.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you see? It was tiger! Now it's fucking in table! Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah.
He was from South America. Yeah. This is the land of freedom and tigers turning into in tables!
I want to share an interesting story. We were playing Fables Live one time at a small bar that didn't usually have shows. So we're in the middle of this 36-minute thing, and it's all quiet, and these two are playing guitar real quietly. And this guy just walks around the audio booth and starts to come up on stage.
Oh, yeah, we thought we were going to die.
And we're, like, looking at each other, and he comes up, and I'm on the opposite side from Nick, and I just see him grab Nick's collar, and then he lets it go. And then I see him grab Ryan's collar, and I'm, like, looking, and he lets it go. And he comes up to me, and he holds my cheeks, and he just looks at me, and he nods at me, and I nod at him, and he grabs my collar, and he walks behind. And I look down, and he had put a $100 bill in each one of our collars because he loved the song. He didn't know what to do. And he came up on stage at a quiet moment, individually to each one of us, $100 bill.
Dang.
And he probably was so drunk, and he's like, man, I gave those kids $10. It's going to change their lives. And he fucking he wakes up the next morning, he's like, I can't pay my electric bill. Son of a bitch! Probably like, that's what happened.
I love that story,
but,
Jeff.
Yeah, I'll never forget it.
I was like, this is how I die at this dive bar on a Saturday in the middle of March.
Yeah. Yep.
But to answer your question, mine is a little bit more like, you know, ooh, floaty.
Yeah.
I hope people go on, like the people who get it and like it, and who are like, they were saying, kind of like, wow, like watching and really taking it in. I kind of hope they, you know, kind of have like a, like, you know, a visual experience a little bit. Like, I want people to go on a journey. I want people to feel like they're transported. Not even necessarily like, oh, from their worries and their woes. It's just like, I want the music to provide something, I don't want to say cinematic, but like, I want them to feel like they're going somewhere. And they're like hearing music being played and then seeing the performance of it and like, they're like, they're taken somewhere. And I think that you can do that with any length of song or anything. But like, I think the live element of something, hopefully like what we're doing, can provide something like that in a unique way where it's like this thing just keeps rolling forward and the band is barreling on and hopefully we're playing well because we're trying. And that person is like, wow, this is cool. And it's like, it's like they're taking the trip. They're taking the journey. Like you said, they're punching the ticket and they're taking the ride. But
yes.
It becomes cerebral, becomes, you know, something more than just like staring at four not very attractive guys on stage playing their instruments.
Hey, speak for yourself.
Well, yeah, that's sorry,
right.
Oh, sorry.
That's right.
Three and a half not attractive guys on stage. So it's like,
I'll take that.
I
can't push back now.
But, the five guys, I guess, because it's when we have our keyboard player with us. But like, it becomes one of those things where it's like, I want people to see, they're on a boat in the middle of a lake and the moon is shining. Like, I want people to, see these things. And again, that's all subjective, but I kind of hope it's that. I kind of hope they just go somewhere. And then when it's over, they're like, oh man, bummer. Yeah. And then we play another song and hopefully they're back. But that's kind of the dream.
I'm looking forward to my chance to catch you guys live. I'm definitely going to take the ride.
I hope so. We have a show in Fort Myers on Friday.
Well,
so.
maybe that'll be the first time.
Maybe. That'd be cool. We'll be playing Exorcism, so then you can be like, boo.
Well, Ryan, Jeff, Nick, thank you so much for coming, you guys.
Thank you very much.
Tell you how much I appreciate you guys sharing. And if it isn't this Friday, I'm definitely stoked to catch you guys and everybody else out there catch you guys.
Hell yeah.
So thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Ah, we're dressed. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Thank you.
Well done.